You're listening to Ecto Portal, a journey into the unknown with Anthony Anderson and Verna Wilson.
I hope that you are seated comfortably with the light turned down and the curtains drawn.
Welcome to another journey into the unknown, the unexplored, the unexplained, Ecto Portal. I'm Anthony Anderson, your host, and I'm here with my co-host,
Verna Wilson,
and
Linda Walker.
She's back. She has a new phone,
from
she's addicted.
I am not addicted.
She's addicted to her new phone. She won't admit it.
Of our special guest tonight.
She's totally addicted to her phone, though.
Oh, shut up.
And she's mean, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, she's rude.
So tonight we have a special guest.
It's John Stanley, Creature Feature.
That's right. Bay Area legend John Stanley.
That's right.
Former host of Creature Features. So if you grew up in the Bay Area, you will know John very well and Bob Wilkins very well prior to him.
You'd be as old as me.
And the show still comes on. People still watch it. I've watched a couple episodes.
That's right.
Ones.
It's
on where?
It's on Coffee TV now, isn't it?
Coffee, yeah.
Yeah, it has a new host.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Pretty wild.
Mm-hmm. A lot of silly B movies they play.
That's what they've always been
movies. But they've been, well, I haven't seen them in a long time. I've just been watching a lot of silly. Yeah.
Okay. So what did you do this week, Verna?
Nothing exciting.
Okay, great. Linda, no, I'm just
exactly. Skip over. Nothing exciting. I went grocery shopping. Woo-hoo-hoo. I know. Went grocery shopping, did some house cleaning. Let's see. Read my new book. I'm not done reading it yet. Watched a few movies and basically lazed around with my cats.
Okay.
That's and they did pets. Fight. They did have a cat fight over their new treats.
That's always fun.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's over with real quick. Well, what did you do?
What did I do?
Yours is as exciting as mine. Okay.
I cleaned more because I've been on a cleaning rampage this last couple months.
Clean a morgue?
Clean. No, I didn't clean a morgue. Can you imagine having to clean a morgue? I would quit.
Ew.
There's people who do it every day.
There are, and I'm not one of them. So I cleaned my house more, and I... what did I go see? I went to see Guillermo del Toro's new movie, The Shape of Water. It's kind of an homage to The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
It takes place in the 60s.
I've heard about that.
But a woman who, they bring this experimental government building. She's a cleaner with her and Octavia Spencer. And they have this fish man they caught from the Amazon who looks suspiciously a lot like The Creature from the Black Lagoon, but different. So that's to avoid the universal copyright problem.
Is it less cornball?
Well, no, it's not. They didn't do the Creature from the Black Lagoon. It's a different story entirely.
Yeah, but, it's a total different story.
Okay.
It's kind of a nod to it. So it's a government thing. She's like a mute.
Mm-hmm.
So she can't really talk, but she signs and she hears, and she's develops a rapport with this creature. And that's all I'll say. It was actually pretty good.
Oh.
That's good.
So that's probably about it. That's all I did. And Walking Dead, of course, which I won't give away the end of the mid-season finale.
Yeah.
Linda said I could tell her, so I did. But yeah. I won't tell you.
I'm shocked.
They were talking about it before the show came on.
We were. It's exciting.
Yeah. I'm a Walking Dead freak.
I am a fan, not a freak, but okay.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
No.
She begs to differ on that one.
I forgot what I did this weekend.
Oh, she took amnesia pills again. That's what
she
did.
I just totally, yeah.
Well, you watched Hateful Eight on your phone.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I got this brand new phone. It's really super cool. I got Netflix. And so I've been watching the Hateful Eight and Doctor Strange. And my husband saw Doctor Strange. I fell asleep.
It's good, though.
And, you know.
Catching up on all your shows.
Yeah. Well, I can't. I have to wait because all the shows are running. Yeah, I can't catch up with the American Horror Story
yet.
You have
Netflix. You could be watching The Crown right now, Linda.
Oh, you know what? I got that on my list, and I am going to watch it next to Moani.
I still have to watch that.
I'm halfway through season two. There's 10 episodes a season.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
It's good. You'll get into it.
Yeah, I heard it's really good.
But it's kind of a slow builder.
Of course.
But it's
just like the royal family.
The life of it's the life of Queen Elizabeth from a girl all the way up.
Right.
So it develops, you know, slowly.
How she came to be queen.
Have you been watching on Channel 9 the series about Queen Victoria? The Masterpiece Theater series?
No, I'm too busy watching The Crown and Walking Dead. And
oh, well, it's coming on in January, but that's going to be season two. But
that's good.
But it's really very good. Go ahead and just put in Masterpiece Theater, Queen Victoria, and you can watch season one.
On Netflix?
You can probably go to, it's probably on Netflix, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, anyhow.
I will do that.
We are the queen.
Yes.
Yes. We do the wave.
Hey, that's pretty good.
So, do you want to get to it?
Yeah, let's get to the news.
Do you want to go first?
I'll go first.
All right. I'll eat some
popcorn.
Strange but true stories from the paranormal world.
All of a sudden, she's taking over my job.
I'm going to turn her mic right off. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Object that passed near Earth could be alien spacecraft, says the professors. And this article takes place in Miami. They said an object that recently passed by Earth could actually be a broken spacecraft from an alien civilization, according to multiple professors. First seen in October, the comet-like Oumuamua is the first object observed from the planet that is from outside the solar system. The Daily Mail reports Dr. Jason Wright of Penn State University believes Oumuamua is traveling in such an odd way that the spacecraft theory may be reality. The cigar-shaped Oumuamua flew by the planet in November, but instead of moving in similar fashion as other space material, astronomers say the quarter of a mile long comet appears to be tumbling. Such derelict craft would, if they are not traveling so fast that they escape the galaxy, eventually thermalize with the stars and end up drifting around like any other interstellar object or asteroid, writes Wright. In fact, since they are presumably no longer have attitude control, one would expect that they would eventually begin to tumble. And if they are very rigid, that tumbling might distinguish them from ordinary interstellar asteroids. And in fact, just because their propulsion is broken doesn't mean that their radio transmitters would be broken. Meanwhile, Harvard astrophysics professor Avi Loeb has his own alien spacecraft theory, according to Express. Perhaps the aliens have a mothership that travels fast and releases baby spacecrafts that fall freely into planetary system on a reconnaissance mission, said Loeb. The more I study this object, the more unusual it appears, making me wonder whether it might be an artificially made probe which was sent by an alien civilization. So,
it sounds like a piece of driftwood.
Did you see the picture?
Outer space. Yeah, I seen the picture.
I thought it looked like
a piece of driftwood.
I think it looked like a giant turd.
I can kind of see that.
It's a giant turd.
Now, did you want to read this this one?
The hairy guy?
About the hairy dog?
No, you do the hairy dog.
Okay. You just make the smart-ass remarks when I do it, okay?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Witness report, I encountered a 6-foot dog man in the forests of West Germany in 1972.
Yes.
Okay, I gotta get to the article.
Okay.
Sightings of dogmen, upright walking canines that often resemble the iconic werewolf, have been rising over the last decade.
Cool.
While the eyewitness encounters with those creatures range from the bizarre to the downright terrifying, most reports are fairly recent, usually appearing after the Beasts of Bray Road of Bray Road legend began to take hold of the popular consciousness, leading skeptics to believe. What?
Does she bring treats for him? You know, here.
Let me finish the article and then we can discuss the treat part. Okay, this leads skeptics to believe that most stories of giant dog monsters are simply tall piggybacking on the popularity of Wisconsin's Beast. Fortunately, the occasional tale pops that predates the current dogman explosion.
Naughty dog.
Our latest witness report comes from a man who claims to have encountered a dogman in Germany. Stop it, Linda. Back in the 70s, and goes into great detail not just about its appearance, but how he believes a creature might be related to an ancient agrarian cult of farmland protectors.
Really?
Yeah. In the fall of 1972, while camping, I saw one of those so-called dog men. I was an army brat living in West Germany in a place called Wildflecken. It was a
Wildflecken.
That's what it's pronounced. Wildflecken. It was a heavily wooded area. Lots of places for a boy of 12 or so to go camping. I was with a friend. It was about 9 p.m. The month of November. We had a fire built, and I remember my friend was sitting cross-legged next to the fire. I was directly across from him, standing and doing something. We were in a tiny clearing with evergreens all around. We were talking to each other when all of a sudden this very tall creature standing on two legs, which look a bit like a German Shepherd.
I took another LSD hit.
Like a German Shepherd.
He stepped out of the foliage. It was about 6 or 7 feet tall, much like in the Weak and Weird witness report. I distinctly remember the tall ears, long snout, heavy shoulders, long tail, and bent dog legs.
Wait, did he have... So he didn't have clothes?
It was a naked, hairy German Shepherd dog.
Was he a horny dog?
Are you looking for a little...
Oh, I can't finish this article. Okay. Okay, they said it seemed to be muscular in build, had a thick upper body and a narrow lower body, colored the mane the same as a German Shepherd. The thing stepped over the fire between us and was gone in a quick second. It was extremely fast.
And we noticed that it's...
And nobody offered it a bone or anything, you know?
Well, maybe he wanted to offer a bone.
We both exclaimed at the same time, "What the hell was that?" before running as fast as we could to my friend's house.
Dog man.
We locked ourselves in his basement and slept there for the rest of the night. We never spoke of it again. We don't know what we saw, but it never made any aggressive gestures or noises at us. Like Linda said, she probably would go...
It sounded like that Kerfagenflagen up in the...
Anyway, a lot of those German myths are full of... So-called. Boy, you guys are really at it tonight, aren't you?
A lot of those German legends are full of what, Erna?
Full of what?
You know, people that are half...
Or half what?
Read the Grimm's Tales, everybody.
Yeah, I know.
You know, mythological creatures where they're part animals and they talk.
Oh.
Yeah, something like that.
Enchanted animals.
Yeah. So this could, I don't know.
Did it dance or talk? I think it just walked over the fire.
It just walked over the fire, then it left. Anyway, they were saying that could a secret group of Benandanti still be fighting against supernatural threats in Germany? Our European readers should keep their eyes peeled and be sure to send in any strange reports they discover. This is from...
Because they can take them and breathe them and put them in the dog show. We found our
best in show, right? Okay.
It's Dogman. You can have a Dogman too.
Okay, folks. Check enough of the dog. Enough of the dog jokes. And Anthony, time for your article.
I think.
Whatever.
All right.
Maybe it was a hipster.
So maybe, yeah, a big hairy hipster, drunk and lost. Okay, I have a new one.
Okay.
Terrified student films Ghost Caretaker stalks through an abandoned mental asylum. A horrified student claims she captured the ghost of a caretaker stalking an abandoned mental asylum after dark. Kyla Perberdi was exploring Denby Asylum in Wales with three friends when she came across a spooky derelict corridor. Ooh. You never find those.
Never.
Despite hearing banging, talking, and experiencing cold shivers, it wasn't until Kyla looked back at the photographs taken on December 2nd that she noticed the ghostly figure. The 22-year-old was shocked when she saw the ghost lurking in the distance and believed it could have been a deceased caretaker who used to work at the asylum. Kyla from Crew Cheshire said, "It was really scary in there. It felt as though ghosts were present because I could feel the tensions."
And you're sure she talked like that?
Of course I do. But it wasn't until we returned to the car and I was looking through the photographs and I saw the ghost. As soon as I saw the figure, I had a horrible pain in my chest. She suddenly turned into a cockney. Pain in my chest that went all the way down to my arm and I couldn't speak. It was terrifying.
She would be fun to investigate with.
Rumor has it that there's a ghost of a caretaker there. I'm sure it's him. Kyla, an avid fan of the paranormal, decided to explore the abandoned asylum after hearing it was haunted. Despite being skeptical about what she would find, she came out of the asylum horrified and having her beliefs of the paranormal confirmed. Kyla added, "When we were in there, it was terrifying. Doors were shutting behind us, and there was continually banging. When I started taking photographs, I could see orbs and mist covering my screen as though the ghost was getting in the photo. As soon as I saw the mist, I knew I had to get out of the asylum. So I ran out, but as I was running, I could still hear voices. However, even when I thought I was safe in the car, that's when I saw the caretaker in the photograph of the corridor. My fear took me all over again."
What a chicken investigator.
Despite her terrifying encounter at the asylum, Kyla insists she wants to return in the daytime and even wants to camp out in the asylum's adjoining morgue.
Daytime won't make any difference. Right.
I will not be cleaning that morgue either.
No. She can clean it.
Kyla said, "Although it was terrifying, going back to the building in the day would be a great way to continue exploring. We also didn't get to see the morgue when we were there. It's something that the paranormal side of me really wants to see. I want to camp there in the hopes of seeing some more ghosts. It would be interesting to see if the caretaker returns."
Whatever.
Okay, so I don't know if I believe Kyla. Have you seen the picture?
I've seen the picture. It's like...
It looks like a Scooby-Doo ghost.
Yeah.
It does kind of look like a Scooby-Doo ghost.
Look, it's a man. It looks like he's wearing trousers.
It just looks like weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I give it a...
Whatever.
Scooby-Doo ghost.
Thank you.
Scooby-Doo ghost.
Now, there's
it
another...
It took me a while to take a really good look at that picture.
It was in the distance down the corridor.
Way in the distance. And then they put the close-up and it was not even better.
So there's another video posted, and all these are on our Facebook page for Ectoportal. Mm-hmm. There's another video of I don't know if you saw this. I posted it again. It's just a short clip. There's not a really large article with it, of a girl standing in the street. And there's a guy standing a few feet from her. She sort of walks into the street in front of a car, kind of peeks around, and all of a sudden something literally slams her, and she does a backflip and lands
on the
ground.
That was the other day I saw that Jason Hawks from Taps put this little video thing.
Yeah.
And I saw it, and I looked at it, and I go, whoa! And so I told my husband, I said, check it out. And I said, what do you see? You know, and it had a lot of comments about that it could have been a wire that she probably tripped on. But she was like,
but it looks like
something
pulls what she has in her hand first,
mm-hmm.
and then it smacks her.
Smacks her right on the street.
It literally looks like someone hauled off and smacked her.
Smacked her. Mm-hmm.
She went flying and backflip.
That was bizarre.
That was
like probably some Latin American country or something.
I guess.
Like that.
But then the guy, there's the guy.
The guy was like,
he kind of looks like, is anyone going to do anything to help her?
I know. He was too busy on his phone.
I know. It was so. It was, but it was kind of shocking, though.
It was. I was shocked. I even had to show it to my husband. I was so whoa.
So check that little video clip out. It's on our Facebook page. The last little bit is a ghost girl picture was snapped at the Myrtles Plantation. Mm. A group of women were visiting the attraction and managed to capture something unusual in one of the photographs. Situated in St. Francisville, Louisiana, and said to be built on top of a Tenisab Indian burial ground, the Myrtles Plantation is considered one of the most haunted places in America. I disagree. One of the many ghosts that's said to lurk within the building is that of William Drew Winter, an attorney who was shot by a stranger and then died while attempting to climb up the stairs.
You guys went there, didn't you?
Yeah, we did.
Thought so.
To this day, visitors and employees have also reported hearing dying footsteps. This most recent photograph, which was posted on the plantation's Facebook page, and I just posted this article on our page, was taken by a group of women during a recent visit and shows an unexplained face of a little girl in the top right corner in the window. Mm-hmm. Could this be someone who once worked on the plantation, or has the image been doctored? It looks, I don't know.
It looks kind of weird.
So when you visited, what did you see?
It looks like, you know how in the morning when the windows get condensation and somebody kind of drew something there? Exactly. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah, I would be.
Whatever.
I feel the same way, too.
Yeah, I don't think it was legit.
You know, anytime I have people who post pictures like that, you know, no. It doesn't even.
The only thing we saw there, I did see a shadow figure move across one of the front porches around the front of the house. Most people sit on the back, and the front people don't really sit on. And I noticed, because we were in the parking lot and I was looking at the house, I saw a dark figure at the edge of the porch move back out
of
view.
That's cool. That was
kind of cool.
In the Myrtle Plantation, as I remember, it has the slave quarters.
Nope, they don't have
they
any.
They don't have it?
They
not
don't
anymore?
Have any. They don't have any real ones anymore.
Oh, that's too bad.
They were gone long ago. In fact, the owner, current owner, once, I guess, was looking to buy some real ones and put them on the property where the other ones used to be.
Oh, that's too bad, because I heard they were super haunted. Well, they could still be, but.
Well, they turned it into the kitchen and the restaurant. That's what's there. There's a carriage house.
Food?
And there isn't really any. There's like one slave quarter building. They turn into something else.
Okay.
But that was
I think they had like symbols or something, like voodoo symbols.
Well, there's a story and a picture of two little kids on the roof. That's pretty famous about Myrtles. And Chloe is a slave girl that she's seen in a picture at the Myrtles. And people claim to see her in the mirror when they take a picture of themselves at the mirror, in front of the mirror. Some people have gotten some interesting pictures, but this one, it looks like someone breathed on the window and drew on it.
Look.
I mean, I have doubts because they don't let you run around in the house. You have to go on the tour, and they don't let you wander.
That's not fun.
And you don't get to go through the house by yourself.
That's too bad.
You get to go upstairs where your rooms are, or you go outside or the gift shop, but. They don't really let you wander.
I heard the restaurant burned down, too. Remember last year?
The food was bad. There's a reason it
burned
down.
That's why it was so bad.
Karma burnt it down.
Yeah.
That's nice of you to say.
It was really bad, but it was really good. It wasn't really good.
That's sad.
It was.
They might as well build a Waffle House on the plantation.
All right, and there we go.
All right. Okay, there it is.
News from around the world. Unexplained, explored, mysterious, haunted, UFOs, Linda.
Huh?
Huh?
I really
enjoy
that.
So coming up here in just a couple minutes, we're going to have our special guest call in, John Stanley from Creature Features.
Yay!
A Bay Area staple who's hosted for, I think, 6 years, and I think Bob Wilkins did 8 years. So the show ran for quite a while, and John,
believe me, I remember,
took the reins over from Bob, and we'll hear more about that and his adventures on the show and with various celebrities that he's had encounters with. A lot of famous people on that list. I was impressed. That's more impressive celebrity interview list than a lot of shows get.
Well, he has a journalist background, so we'll be asking him about that. And
I bet you that's probably what, I'm sure, helped with all of that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
And context, you never know. But we got a lot of context, too.
Right.
Yeah.
I did not grow up in the Bay Area, so I did not experience Creature Features. I experienced up in Seattle, Washington, a show called Nightmare Theater, when we had the Count dressed as a short jokester Dracula. Joe Tui, I think is his name, was actually the director and producer of J.P. Patch's show up in Seattle, which was a clown who lived in the city dump in Seattle. And that show was on for, man, I don't know how many years that show went on, 18 years maybe. But he was the director the entire time, but he was the count from 68 until 75. So he had a short period where he was doing
his
show at night.
I heard about that show, and I heard about him. Yeah.
He was doing his show at night, and then he'd do J.P. Patches the next morning. So that's a late night and an early morning, because he was back directing.
Wow.
I remember touring J.P. Patches as a kid, the set, you know, looking all the rooks and crannies to see where all the things that didn't exist, rubber chicken in the oven, that kind of stuff. But I loved the count. He scared me, but he used to do publicity stuff where he'd come to your softball team game.
Oh, really?
Very cool.
Elks Christmas, he'd show up. So We were very excited to meet the Count and JP Patches. So
that's cool.
Same idea, horror movies.
Yeah.
Host, but he had his whole horror shtick, and right. It was a used Addams Family model that was his set.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah. So I don't. They did some green.
Well, that's what I love about Creature Features. You know, but I love Bob Wilkins. I got so educated on B movies.
Right.
You know, he played the worst of the worst of movies, but I learned a lot about horror movies and B movies and stuff.
And I love the way they decorated the set with his rocking chair, and then they had the fireplace in the background. Yeah. And John Stanley had the same kind of set almost. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So stay tuned, folks. We're going to come right back with John Stanley from Creature Features on FCC Free Radio.
One of my favorite horror movies that I've ever seen, even when I see it this day, is, I don't know if you ever showed it on Creature Feature, was a House of Wax with a Vincent Price.
The House of Wax was an influential movie in my viewing career, too. I was 13 years old. I'd never seen a 3D movie before. Vincent Price was not an established horror star. Vincent Price had been a supporting player in motion pictures. I think he had made a couple of films that were in a gothic horror kind of vein, like Dragonwick, but primarily was in some mysteries and comedies. He seemed to be just a good supporting actor. And then with the coming of House of Wax, we saw a whole new career open up for him, which would continue through most of his life. But not only that, but there was this element of 3D, this dimensional experience. And that's something that I never forgot, and it will always remain a primary and primeval film that touched me a lot.
Welcome back. Tonight's special guest, John Stanley from Creature Features. He'll be with us calling in just a couple minutes here. Yep. So you girls grew up with this show.
I sure did.
Is it on Friday and Saturday or just Friday?
I think it was only on Friday.
Was it Friday?
Yeah, it was
Saturday?
Only one night a week.
It was one night a week.
Do you guys, do you both agree it was Friday or do you think it was Saturday?
I thought it was on a Saturday.
I thought it was Saturday.
Yes, I think it was on a Saturday.
Okay.
Because, because
when
I
did
remember,
it start?
About 8 o'clock or so.
No, it was late night. It was around 11.
Oh yeah, I guess 11. It was a little later.
It was around 11, you know, because he played like old, you know, some movies that were too scary for, you know, the viewing audience. I guess you know he played a lot of you know, B movies and a lot of Hammer movies.
Hammer movies, yep. Universal horror.
I learned. I really got educated by Hammer films. And,
there's some great Hammer films.
Oh God, yeah. And I mean,
did you guys have Elvira down here in the Bay?
Syndicated? No,
because she's syndicated all over the country.
I think she got syndicated a little bit later on. Or
because in the '80s, maybe it was the '80s.
I think it was the '80s when I saw Elvira, when I heard of her.
Yeah, we had her in the late mid '80s. I think.
No, I mean, actually, I heard of Elvira during the late '70s because I was living in Hollywood at the time, and she was pretty popular.
She was part
there.
Of the Groundlings too, so I think she probably did start up then.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we had her in syndication, but we had and in
I
Seattle,
love her.
I know she's awesome.
Yeah, she is.
So that's cool.
Yeah. So yeah. You know, I mean, he was kind of Bob Wilkins was kind of mysterious to me. You know, I mean, he had that goofy background music, like, you know, you played, and I always remember that there would be like a mist, you know, like a fog, and he would be sitting in the rocking chair, and then the lights would go on, and there he is smoking a cigar. You know, and then he would talk about what movies he's going to play and stuff and, you know, continue with the show on, you know, and that was it, you know.
I was just, we were just talking to Vern, I was talking to Vern on the, during the break. Apparently John was working at the Chronicle the entire time he was doing the show.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So he was
a journalist background. Yeah,
entertainment journalist. So he was doing his full-time job while he was doing this gig, which is pretty cool.
So he's from the San Francisco, right?
Yeah. Sent for the Chronicle.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Two jobs.
Yeah, two jobs.
Hey,
yeah.
Got to pay the bills.
At least that we know of. Who knows? He may have more jobs.
Yeah.
But he had a big fan base. People really loved John, and they followed. Oh, there he is.
Speak of the devil. Are you there, John?
Yes. Hello. Is this Anthony?
This is Anthony. Welcome.
Well, I'm glad to talk to you tonight. And you and Verna was there.
Hi, John.
Hi, Verna.
And her sister Linda.
And this is my sister Linda, who's a big fan of yours. Great, big
Linda.
Fan of Creature
Hello,
Feature.
Hello, Linda.
Hi, John.
How are you?
So honored to meet
where
you.
Where have you been all my life?
Oh, where have you been all my life?
Yeah.
Well, you're in the Bay.
It's been quite a few years going back. Quite a story to tell.
I can hardly wait to hear all about you.
Okay, well, I hope most of it's good.
That depends on
you.
You
never know.
Well, I was talking about that, you know, I was about maybe 12, 13 years old when the original Creature Features with Bob Wilkins came out.
Uh-huh.
And how I used to, I think it was like on a Saturday night?
Yes.
Saturday night,
well,
about 11
o'clock. Well, Bob came on unusually in prime time. Mm-hmm. Most horror hosts come on after the news at 11 o'clock
right.
or 11:30.
Exactly.
But it was decided at Channel 2 that if we put Bob in prime time, we might be able to do very well with it. And by golly, they did. They were able to compete with the three major networks that were dominating television in those days.
Yeah, that's so cool. Verna has something to say?
Oh, well, I just wanted to go ahead and just tell us a little bit about your background and how you actually got to be the host. And
how'd you get the gig?
Yeah, what's the story behind it? Yeah.
Well, as I was growing up at the age of 9, I fell in love with science fiction through the pulp magazines that were on the news racks. I began reading in 1949 and 50 the horror comics that were put out by Bill Gaines, EC Comics.
Yeah.
The Vault Keeper, The Crypt of Terror,
mm-hmm.
And I just thought these were the very best of comics, and indeed they were. They set a whole new trend and pattern. And so as I grew up, I wanted to be a writer in my teens, and I was actually on a couple of newspapers, weekly newspapers in Napa. I was able to create crossword puzzles. I was writing columns. Police columns every week, and anyway, out of that emerged this desire to write. And so while I was attending San Francisco State, I was able to land a job as a copy boy at the San Francisco Chronicle, the leading newspaper in San Francisco at that time. And I started as a copy boy, and they told me, we do not promote copy boys to cub reporters. This is a dead-end job. 9 months later, I had a summer-long writing job on This World / Sunday Datebook. Sunday Datebook was the entertainment section that ran the television logs and had interviews with movie stars and television stars. That lasted for the summer, and then I went back to being a copy boy for a very short period, and suddenly This World staff had to fire one of its writers, and I was asked if I would like to step in, and it became a full-time job that would last for almost 33 years.
Wow.
Specializing and covering motion pictures, personalities, directors, stars. I had contacts at all the major television studios. I knew PR people located in most of the studios in those days. And just had a ball covering the entertainment world. Someone once estimated I interviewed around 800 celebrities.
Wow, that's quite a number.
How I did that, I'm not sure.
Wow.
But it was
one at a time.
It was great. Now along the way, I happened to catch on television. Now this is when there weren't very many TV channels.
Uh-huh.
You had your three major networks. You had PBS, Channel 9, and maybe a few independent stations would be picked up in a certain regional, on a regional basis. And suddenly one night we got KCRA from Sacramento on our television, and Bob Wilkins was hosting in the early years a Saturday night horror series. This is long before Channel 2 came into it. He became a character on Channel 2. This lasted for about 4 years for Bob. And one of the executives who moved away from Sacramento to Oakland at Channel 2 decided to bring Bob in on prime time on Saturday nights, 9 o'clock. And then Bob continued after the news at 11:30, presenting older films. Maybe sometimes he would show chapters of old serials, you know, Flash Gordon science fiction serials. So Bob was really, from 1971 until 1978, a true star in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. Probably more people watched him than anybody else in his time zones. Well, I was working at the Chronicle at the time, and Bob and I had not met personally, but I had been in touch with him through the mail and also with telephone calls. And he would often, from a letter I would write to him, quote me when he was showing a certain motion picture. And so therefore we established a relationship that suddenly I was told in 1978 around November that he was going to resign. So I gave him a call thinking this is going to be, this could be a front page story for the Chronicle.
Yeah, absolutely.
The leading Bay Area personality is leaving Channel 2.
Yep.
And Bob, I got a hold of Bob at home, and he said, John, I want you to take my place. And I said, Bob, I don't know anything about hosting television. I'm a writer. He says, well, please meet some executives and at least do that for me. So I agreed to meet some executives. The executives said they wanted me to cut a sample show. So I thought, okay, what have I got to lose? So I went out and I photographed some footage of me going to movie theaters in downtown San Francisco.
When they still were there?
I photographed a scene of me running through the front door of Channel 2 with a roll of tape under my, or a can of film under my arm. And I actually did had a couple of people I interviewed, and I created this, sample audition show. And much to my amazement, even though a lot of other Bay Area personalities tried for the job, they picked me to replace Bob.
Did Bob have any influence about you getting the job, do you think?
Yes. Okay. I think he insisted to the executives that I do it, and I guess they felt my presentation with the special footage I had shot and the guests I had, I guess they felt I could do it. So that's how it all started.
And you interviewed him, too, earlier, and so he...
In 1971, nobody had heard of Bob pretty much in San Francisco unless they had watched the Sacramento station. And I had a two-page interview with him in the Sunday date book, the Sunday before he did his premiere show on Channel 2 in Jack London Square.
So that's interesting. So you kind of introduced him to the here, and then he turned around and introduced you back here.
Yes, at the tail end of his time at Channel 2, he was saying John should take my place. The difference between me and Bob, Bob really, when he started, didn't have much knowledge of horror films or science fiction. It was his sense of humor that the station liked. When they would be giving a farewell party to an employee, Bob would be the host for the little party, and apparently everyone was laughing their heads off at Bob because he was so clever, that they just decided, hey, let's let Bob do a TV show here.
So did they kind of say, hey, Bob, we want you to host horror movies? They kind of said, that's kind of what we want you to do?
Well, the station had just received a lot of apparently new films. You know, in those days, unlike today when we have movie channels, we can watch 24 hours a day and see old and new movies and so on. Back in those days, that just wasn't the way it was done. Movies were sold individually to TV stations across the country, and they could then project them to just their regions alone. So Channel 2 suddenly had all of these new horror films, particularly the British films, the Hammer films.
The Hammer films, yeah.
And, of course, the old Universal films from the 30s and 40s
right.
were always popular, the Frankenstein and Dracula films.
Those always went over
very well. So Bob was able to now show you different aspects of horror and how it had developed over the years, over the decades.
Yeah, I mean, he pretty much, I mean, when I was talking about, you know, how I used to see him on the show, he was just kind of so mysterious to me because all he was in that set, and he was in the fog, and he was on a rocking chair with a cigar in his hand.
Yes,
you know,
yes,
and then he just introduced the films and stuff, and sometimes he would do something funny, you
yes,
know, like
yes,
in the middle of the...
He had his motto, watch horror films, keep America strong.
That was
put up on the wall.
Yep.
He had the rocking, the yellow rocking
the yellow
chair,
rocking
and he
chair.
Had the skull... with mm-hmm. the candle in it.
Oh, God.
Oh, yes, gosh, yeah.
You know,
and so it wasn't so much what Bob knew about horror films. It was just he was playing a horror host, but unlike other horror hosts, he didn't wear a costume.
Mm-mm.
He didn't portray a character,
no.
A horror character. He was just,
Bob.
Here I am, I'm wearing a suit.
His own personality stood out.
And tie. Mm-hmm. I'm just your average business guy. I'm Bob Wilkins. Hello, here's tonight's movie.
Mm.
If you would like to know how he first achieved his success, his very first show at KCRA in Sacramento, he had a copy of TV Guide, and he began to read to the viewers what was on the other channels in his time slot.
Oh, I believe it.
And on Monday morning, the advertisers, who consisted of car dealerships in Roseville,
mm-hmm.
Just on the outskirts of Sacramento,
yeah.
called up to complain to the manager, hey, what's this Bob Wilkins doing? He's putting down the product we're trying to sell. And so the manager got on the phone and explained to them, well, Bob succeeded in outdoing all of the other programs in his time slot on Saturday night.
Method to his
and
madness.
And so the next thing that the manager heard was, how soon can Bob meet us for lunch?
Hey, John, just out of curiosity,
Bob's career just took off.
John, out of curiosity, when you took over, was there a moment where you thought, I could do a character that's different? I could do like all the other horror hosts in the country, do the Dracula, the Svengoolie?
Well, that's a great question, and it's funny, I never thought of doing that. I thought, if I'm going to follow in Bob's footsteps, I'm going to be like him. I'm just going to be a guy wearing a suit or a sweatshirt mm-hmm. or something.
Uh-huh.
I'll sit in a chair, and I will be able to talk about the film I'm going to show tonight. And I had personal contacts with a lot of science fiction writers in the Bay Area,
uh-huh.
as well as in Hollywood. And I got a call when I first started from the local people who represented Walt Disney.
Oh,
studios.
Yeah.
Really?
And they knew I taped my show on Friday afternoon. So if they had a new movie opening, say, next Friday, the previous Friday, they would bring the star of the show to the station. So I would be able to interview the star or celebrity
mm-hmm.
connected to the project, and I would be able to say, coming next week is a new Walt Disney film, and here's the star of the movie.
Wow.
And
that's
that
a cool
was
setup.
The kind of
I remember.
Wonderful stuff that I was able to do.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I also had personal contacts with Ray Bradbury.
I remember that episode.
And Ray was on the show twice.
Yep, I
Christopher
remember.
Christopher Lee was on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to get Vincent Price. He came to San Francisco to appear with the symphony orchestra. He was going to read some things in between pieces of music, but he didn't want to come on the show because he was trying to convince people at that time in his career, 1979, that he no longer was just a horror star. He was a movie star. He wanted to be looked upon as not just someone who made some good horror films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's how it all that's sort of bad. Started. And
didn't he
it
eventually...
went that way for about, let's see, Bob did the show for 8 years and I did it for six.
Mm-hmm.
So the show lasted for 14 years.
That's a long time.
Which
that's
is incredible
good.
For a TV show. Yeah.
Hey, John, can you hang on? We're going to go to our quick station break here.
Yes.
And then continue on.
Definitely.
All right. Sit tight, folks. Hold on. We're going to be right back with John Stanley from Creature Features right here on FCC Free Radio.
What happened was Bob had been doing the show for about 8 years, and I had known Bob from the very beginning. I was the first Bay Area newspaper man to interview him, and so our friendship had developed over the years, and I had been a frequent guest on his show. I had produced a motion picture called Nightmare in Blood, which was made in the Bay Area. Bob had a small part in it, and so we had done a few shows regarding that, and he would call me in sometimes as an expert to discuss into a movie or some new films that I had seen. So when I heard that he was going to leave the show, I heard from the publicist, the Channel 2 publicist. So I got on the phone immediately, calling Bob at home to talk to him because I thought it would make a good story. There was no other motive for doing that. Just, hey, I'm a newspaper man. Here's sounds like a good Bay Area entertainment world story. Well, he comes on the phone, and the first thing he says is, John, I think you should be the one to take my place, and I'll set it up for you so you can talk to the exec.
And welcome back to Ectoportal. John, you still there?
Yes, Anthony, I'm right here.
Just playing a little bit of your theme there.
Yes, I heard all of that. Brought back a lot of memories.
There you go. We threw in a little bit of the blob there, you know.
Now, John, yeah. You have some ghost stories to tell us. So
oh, yeah.
Let's go ahead and hear one of them. Go ahead and pick
yes,
one.
Yes, yes. I'd like to tell you what happened regarding In Search Of. In 1978, in November, it was a syndicated Alan Landsberg series that traveled the world to examine weird mysteries in a documentary style.
Great show.
And it was
great
narrated yep. by mm-hmm. another traveler into unusual mm-hmm. universes. His name was Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah.
Anyway, I heard that they were coming to Oakland to a haunted house, at least an alleged haunted house, called the Slaughterhouse. It was called that because the owner was John Slaughter.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Where was that house? What street? Do you remember what street it was on?
I'm sorry?
You remember what street it was on?
No, I don't. It was a Bavarian-style home, and it was called the oldest building in downtown in Oakland.
Oh,
part
this is
of a 49-acre land grant that dated back to 1854.
Wow. Gotcha. Wow.
And so, one evening, I drove there as a writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. And I have to tell you, I met some very unusual psychics who were there. And we all sat down at the table. Do you remember Sylvia Brown?
Oh, yeah. I met her.
She was a famous psychic.
Yeah,
I met
her too.
Sylvia.
Yep.
Yes, yes. And anyway, she was there, and she kind of went into a trance, and her husband kind of put his hands on her forehead, and she tensed up. She kind of snapped awake, and then she began to describe how she had seen two brothers, and she was describing the brothers, and suddenly they were trying to hurt each other. They were attacking each other. One had a knife. And anyway, even though all these other weird things, Antoinette May was also there.
Oh, yeah, Antoinette, yep.
Mm-hmm. She used to write for the Chronicle. She would write the horoscope each Sunday.
I remember
anyway,
that.
She was there. She saw some white flashes in front of her eyes. I did not see any of these weird things, but they went on to describe many different things that were going on. Anyway, so I wrote a story about this for the Chronicle, not until January. The program didn't air until January. Well, oddly enough, in December, I was picked as the horror host. So when I started my job, one of the first assignments I created for myself was to go to the slaughterhouse and film an interview with its owner, John Slaughter. So we did that on January the 12th, 1979. And my wife, Erica, who would later become my assistant producer for Creature Features, went with me. And my cameraman, Ron Willis, set everything up, and we recorded an interview. And nothing much unusual happened. He took me through the house and showed me some different places where weird things had happened. And it wasn't until my wife and I returned home that Friday night that she turned to me to say that the dog, the terrier family dog, had looked into her eyes and had warned her, get out of this house before it's too late. At least that was the way she interpreted the look.
Wow.
And that night she went to bed, and she didn't get up for two entire days. Saturday night, Sunday night, she slept. I could occasionally wake her up, but she refused to get out of bed. And finally, it wasn't until Monday morning that she seemed to come out of whatever this weird situation was and became normal again.
Wow.
Wow.
One final note. I don't think I told you this before. When I went to the house to do the interview with my Channel 2 cameraman, a San Francisco Chronicle photographer, Vince Majora, he came to the house to take pictures that would run with my story that was going to appear in a couple of weeks in the Chronicle. And that Friday night when I got home, he called me and he said, John, I've just developed the photographs I took. As I was leaving the home, I turned around and I snapped a photograph of the front. And he says, there are two places on the negative where there's something strange. There's this whirling nebulous material. I can't describe what it is, but it's in front of the two places on the front of the house. And so we actually ran that photograph with my story.
Oh, cool.
And there's never been an explanation of what those swirls were, because all of the other pictures he took inside the house had nothing unusual about them.
I would have liked to see those pictures.
Yeah.
I think you
could put them on your website if you still have them.
I'm sorry. Yes, I tell you what. You can go to my website, stanleybooks.net.
Yeah.
And you can still buy a copy of I Was a TV Horror Host.
Oh, yeah, saw that
this
book.
Was a book I wrote 10 years ago. I think I only have like 40 copies left. But you, in fact, I didn't think of it, but I'll tell you what, I'll send you folks a copy, okay?
Oh, really? That would be
with
wonderful.
Autograph.
Yeah,
oh,
I'll
please
send
sign
a copy.
It.
Anthony, I'll send you a copy, and Verna, I'll send you a copy too, okay?
Oh, that's wonderful.
I'll put those in the mail.
Thank you very much.
In a day or two.
And
okay? And you'll see the photograph. The photograph ran with some other pictures that were also taken there.
Very cool.
That's wonderful. Yeah, and I'll also give you Linda's address.
Now,
well.
I have another story regarding the demonologists.
Yes.
Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Oh, yeah, I want to hear about that one.
Pardon me?
Yes, indeed. Ed and Lorraine Warren, we know them well.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. They were a wonderful couple. What was unusual about them, they seemed normal when you first met them and talked to them. There was nothing. They just talked like normal, average people. And we had our meeting in a restaurant in the financial area of San Francisco called Orsi's. And I can't remember why, but they had reserved a table for us. I guess it was Orion Pictures. They were releasing Amityville 2, the second feature film.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Possession.
Which, told you what happened in the house before, I guess before the first movie. It was a sort of a pre-sequel.
Yeah, the DeFeo murders before that.
Yeah, and anyway, we ended up in the wine cellar having dinner, and as we were getting acquainted and talking and having a drink, suddenly Erica grabbed my arm, and she suddenly started to tremble, and she says, "There's something standing outside the door," and I turned to look, and the door was closed. I didn't see anything, but she just grabbed me. This went on for a couple of minutes. I told Ed what was happening. Neither he nor Lorraine had experienced anything unusual. They didn't sense anything. I walked over to the door to look. There didn't seem to be anything there. So anyway, our interview went on, and suddenly the publicist from Orion Pictures jumped up from the table and stepped back, and he says, "Water is falling," and a drop. We could see a drop of water come down and splash on the table, and right where his plate was. And he didn't want to sit there anymore, and he moved to a different location at the table. And again, the Warrens just looked up, and he says, "Well, it must be a leaky pipe, you know." So I got up on the table in the very spot where the drop had fallen and ran my hands along the pipe, but I couldn't feel any moisture anywhere. There was no explanation of where those drops were coming from.
Did and they stop?
Sort of just really, that publicist was just beside himself, given what Erica had said and these raindrops. This was just something he couldn't deal with.
Did the drops continue, or is it just those few?
I thought of that myself, and I couldn't remember. I don't think there were any after that. After the three or four that we saw fall,
that's bizarre.
Sometimes it's hard to remember everything.
Because you'd think if there was a leak, even before you sat down, there would be a wet spot on the table, right?
Yeah, you would think so.
It's very obvious.
Yeah, or on the floor or something, you know. There'd be some indication of a leak somewhere.
Sounds like Erica has a little bit of mediumship ability going on there.
That's what I was thinking.
In the middle of the night, we had only been married a short time, and suddenly she started talking. So I said, "Honey, what's happening?" And she really wasn't awake. And she started answering my question, "What's happening?" She says, "There's a boy who's taking my bike away from me." And she went on to describe this event that had occurred approximately in 1946. Erica grew up in Nazi Germany and went through a lot of horrors of the war.
Oh, wow.
War there. And apparently after the war, some young boy grabbed the bike she was riding on and tried to take it away. Anyway, she told me this story. I had never heard it before. And then she went back to sleep. And the next morning, when she woke up, I told her, "Honey, you told me a story last night in your sleep." I don't remember anything like that. So I started to tell her, "Well, you were telling me about this young boy who took your bike." And she went, "I've never told anybody that before. I didn't tell you that story before."
I just came out.
"Well, in your sleep you did." Yeah, uh-oh. It was very strange.
Now she's probably like, "What else did I tell you?"
Really?
Well, it's funny. A few years later, we began to play with a Ouija board. And suddenly, she would fall into these trances. And finally, because it happened so often, I finally said, "No more. We're not going to play with the Ouija board anymore." And I cannot explain what was happening. But she would go into these semi-conscious states and just kind of sit there shaking her head, and no explanation of what was causing that.
Does she acknowledge that she might have any mediumship abilities at all? Has she ever?
Well, not really. Occasionally she feels she... her father was killed in 1944 on the Russian front.
He
was a driver for some of the... I think he drove an ambulance, or he drove the doctors and nurses. And they were retreating from Russia, and he was killed in a barrage attack.
Oh.
And there have been a few times where she feels his presence is there somewhere, you know, in our house or whatever the moment, wherever we are at the moment, she feels that.
Probably there's a
but
lot
again,
of...
again, no explanation.
Yeah.
Probably there's some post-traumatic stress over the war.
Could
you know,
be,
that
yeah.
She had to go
oh,
through
yeah,
as a child.
Yeah. You know, at night, she'll... whenever she'll talk sometimes just for... She'll say a couple of things. They're always negative. It's always, no, go away, or something like that.
Right.
You
yeah,
know,
that sounds
it's never
like...
anything pleasant.
Deep-rooted memories probably.
Yeah, yeah those that... memories are coming back to haunt her a little bit.
It's very sad. Sounds
so,
like...
yeah.
Yeah.
What are your...
I have one other story
okay.
that
sure.
Erica was present at. I don't think she had anything to do with it. there's a theory in the world, in the psychic world, that sometimes adolescents or young teenagers can have an effect, can create things, unusual things to happen.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in 1986. Our daughter, Trista, was 16 years old. She had a schoolmate who was with her. We were standing in the kitchen. Eric and I were there, my daughter, her friend, and there was a Coke can on the counter, and suddenly this Coke can began to move, and I saw it moving. I said, hey, look, that can is moving, and it went approximately, oh, I'd say 7 or 8 inches and stopped. And I said, did you all see that? And everybody had seen it. Yes. And as I was trying to, you know, shake my head and go, what's going on here? Suddenly, the can moved slowly back to where it had started from.
Bizarre.
Now, can you guys explain that?
No.
Someone's around.
Teenagers were there, and I associated their presence with an object being moved.
Yep.
It shouldn't be moving.
Yeah, that's pretty
know.
Common with the kinetic energy of the hormones and then
yeah,
teenagers.
Yeah.
I've
read that
glands.
In
yep.
the past.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what are your views of the paranormal? Do you actually believe in spirits? And
Yes, I do. There was a time I was on a train in Germany going to Munich. And I had gone to a car behind the one we were in because there was a bathroom there. And somebody was inside, and so I waited, and suddenly I heard the door open, and I turned, and I saw this strange figure of a woman walking away from the door back the other way down the railroad car.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
There was just something very strange about the way she moved and the look, and I don't know. I couldn't explain that. And I walked to the bathroom door, and I just felt something strange. I had just seen something strange. But that's all I can tell you.
So just something off, just the way she moved? And
yeah, yeah. It just
was her clothing
right.
different yeah. or
period,
kind of
any period dress?
Period, you know.
Yeah.
Just, time period dressing?
It was odd. It was very odd. Anyway... That's about it as far as paranormal goes in my life. How about yours?
We're all
ghost hunters.
We're ghost hunters, all of us, all three of us.
So asylums, prisons, things like that.
We've been in...
Linda, too, huh?
That's where I started my first paranormal investigation was with Anthony 7 years ago. We've been friends almost 8 years now. And that's when I started... since you know the city, there's a hotel called the Queen Anne Hotel, and I went to a paranormal conference and did all the hunting, you know, ghost hunting and everything. And, you know, and I mean, I've always been associated with ghosts since I was a little girl, since I was 4. So, and I see strange things all the time. So, but we that's what we do. I mean, so far I've been to that and... you know, some institutions and things like that.
We even found her in an institution.
Yeah, I wanted to react to what you said earlier, Linda.
Yes.
To what you said earlier about growing up and watching creature features.
Mm-hmm.
I want to explain that in the year 2000, Bob Wilkins and I joined forces again. We'd been retired from the television for a long time.
Wow.
For, 16 years. And we started attending special shows that were created for us at the Parkway Theater in Oakland. Mm-hmm. We started attending the WonderCon, a comic book horror show that was held at the San Francisco Convention Center.
I heard of it.
On a yearly basis.
I remember hearing about that.
And there were other shows at the Castro, and Bob and I were appearing in a lot of different places, and we'd be at tables, and the old fans would come up to us, and although each one would tell it in his or her own words, the stories were very similar. It was a story about the memory of growing up at home and on Saturday night watching creature features with mom and dad, brother and sister. Mm-hmm. And this same story would be told to Bob and I over and over again as we met or re-met some of the old fans who would keep coming back to these shows.
You were part of my life. I mean, I ever since my mom always thought I was strange anyhow, loving horror movies and horror.
She was
I
right.
used to, you know, have like, you know, the Tales from the Crypt and, you know, all the horror magazines. I used to have to hide that under the couch from my mother because my mom thought there was something wrong with me, you know, with decapitated bodies in a graveyard and stuff like that, you know, in the comic books. And I love reading that.
Yeah.
And then when Creature Features came out, you know, that's when I really started watching all the B movies.
She
and
did.
All the Hammer
totally
movies
did.
And everything. I was just, I was like in heaven. I mean, you guys were, you were part of the family to me.
Oh,
well,
show.
Yeah.
You were totally part of my family.
It.
You know.
And that's, the story you're telling is very similar to the heartfelt stories that Bob and I would hear over the years, and
we loved
gosh.
You guys.
We used,
you
used to do an annual show at the Castro Theater.
Unfortunately,
and,
I wasn't
we kept
even
going
living
back
in San
to
Francisco.
The Parkway, and it was just really wonderful, you know,
yeah.
to meet all the old fans again. And for a lot of, for many years, we were, we had saved a lot of the segments from our shows.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to bring out some DVDs.
God, I really
VR
wish I was
tapes,
there. I was living in San Diego at
things
the time.
We had done, you know.
Bob, or sorry, John.
That's
you're
right.
saying Bob,
we're
and then you're saying Bob,
now.
John. Like I was telling these girls earlier, I grew up in Seattle, so I didn't have any memory of Creature Features.
But you must have had a horror host there, right?
We had Joe Tui did The Count on Nightmare Theater in Cairo in Seattle. But he also was the director of the morning J.P. Patches show, which ran for like 18 years. Chris Wiedes out of Minneapolis. He moved to Seattle. So he was doing his nighttime Nightmare Theater, and then he'd get up in the morning and direct J.P. Patches. And he did the entire run of that show. But same idea, but he played the count with the jokes, the schlocky humor, and he curled out of his coffin. And, you know, it kind of scared me as a kid because I'm tiny.
He sounds like almost like Spengulli.
Yeah.
He does that.
Yeah.
But he does all the Universal films.
There's a moment I'd like to share with you.
Sure.
In 1991, I received a phone call from Joe Bob Briggs. Joe Bob Briggs may not be remembered exactly as a horror host, but he used to have he used to host television programs where he showed old movies.
Yep.
Sometimes they were exploitation films, crime films with a lot of sexual elements to
was
them.
Was that the movie channel he used to do that for?
Yes.
Joe Bob Briggs Drive-In Theater, right?
Drive-In Theater. That's correct.
Yeah, I remember that.
I remember.
Well, he invited me to come to the Magic Castle in Hollywood because he was going to do some shows with his four most favorite horror hosts. That would be Elvira.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yep.
That would be John Zacherly.
Zacherly
of New York.
Yep.
And the other one was Ernie Anderson, who played Goulardi in Cleveland, Ohio. Do you remember Goulardi?
Goulardi,
no.
Yeah. Ernie Anderson later became the voice on ABC television to introduce a lot of famous television shows, and one of them was Love Boat.
Oh,
the Love Boat.
And people would walk up to him and say, "Do Love Boat for me." And he would go, "The tonight, Love Boat.
Tonight on the Love Boat."
Yeah, and we all met at the Magic Castle, and each one of us photographed a program with Joe Bob Briggs.
That is so cool.
And I have to tell you this. I had interviewed Elvira at her home. Cassandra Peterson is her real name, at her home in
Very
Los
nice.
Angeles. Yep. So we were kind of associates, you know. So I went up to I went up to Elvira at one point, and I said, "What is it that you have that I don't?" As a horror host. And she laughed her head off.
That's a setup for Cassandra if there ever was one.
So,
oh, yeah.
So can I ask you a question?
You know, I went to the... they moved the Creation Con from San Francisco down to the Disneyland area back in 2012.
Oh.
And I was sitting at a table there, and suddenly something pushed against my back. And I turned around, and there was a curtain. There were two rows of tables, but there was a curtain that separated us, tables facing in different directions. So I popped open the curtain, and there on the other side was Elvira.
Small world.
That was her way of saying hello.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, great moment. Great
you said
moment.
You interviewed a lot of people. Did you interview a lot of some of the horror movie celebrities before you became a host?
Oh, boy.
Now, did you ever meet the original Elvira?
A lot of these people I had met through the Chronicle, and I was able to actually call the press people and make contacts. For example, I had gone to Desilu Studios the summer before Star Trek came on the air, 1966. I'd interviewed Gene Roddenberry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And also,
that's cool.
Leonard Nimoy.
I'm a Trekkie.
William Shatner.
Lucky.
And so some of these would later become interviews. In fact, I went to the Star Trek II world premiere down at Paramount and came back with interviews with all of the stars of that movie. So, yes, there were so many celebrities that I was able to connect with over the years.
Vincent Price, you said didn't you have lunch with him?
Yes, I did. And then I think 5 years later, he was at KPIX television with his wife. And that's when I was able to do another interview with him. And this time he was willing to talk about the fact, yes, he had been a horror film star in Hammer movies and Hollywood
show?
Movies, and he finally admitted it.
Was that a cooking show that he used to do? He did a cooking show?
He was into that.
Yes, he wrote a cooking book.
Right.
It's probably a very rare item these days. My dentist used to have one on his coffee table. Every time I went to the dentist,
right.
I was able to look at Vincent Price's cookbook.
Yeah.
About $500 today if
he
you
was
want
like
to find
a home
it.
Chef.
Probably be worth maybe a few thousand dollars.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
but
funny.
There was so another unusual thing I'd like to tell you about.
Yeah.
Were the mini movies, MINI mm-hmm. movies.
Uh-huh.
I decided, gee, it would be great if I could break out of the studio. You know, you're sitting in a chair with somebody, and you try to do cutaways to photographs or film bites. I decided, gee, it would be fun to get out of the studio, go to different locations, and create a mini-movie. And it started with Don Coscarelli. He came to San Francisco in '79 to promote Phantasm.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I came up with this idea after seeing the movie. Gee, wouldn't it be great if we could meet in a graveyard?
Oh, wow. Not really.
So, in
Mausoleum?
Colma, which has a number of graveyards there,
met.
Yep.
And we had a hearse. And so there's a scene where I'm waiting for the hearse to come and pick me up, and suddenly Angus Scrimm, one of the stars of the film, comes walking up behind me and grabs me and throws me into the back of the hearse.
Wow.
And inside the hearse, I do an interview with Angus and also with Don Coscarelli.
Wow.
And this was
great
the
setup.
First of our so-called mini-movies. Another one I did was called The Adventure of the Persian Slipper. There was a hotel in San Francisco, Holiday Inn, mm-hmm. that had a Sherlock Holmes room with all kinds of memorabilia and various props and things. And so I went there with the publicist for that hotel, and we created this mystery. We went into the room together, and we're trying to find out what happened to the Persian slipper. Then Chuck Norris came to San Francisco and wanted to do an interview for one of his early movies, Good Guys Wear Black.
Yeah, yeah.
We met at the Kuk Sool One Martial Arts Training School on Van Ness Avenue. And he and his brother, Aaron, were doing martial arts action, and I had a microphone in my hand, and I went walking across all of these unconscious bodies on the carpet to do an interview with Chuck Norris, and we did the interview there with all kinds of comedy and stuff. Then I went to the Wax Museum and did The Mummy Rises.
Nice.
My next-door neighbor, I wrapped her up in all these bandages, and she sprawled across the coffin, and we went through this procedure like we're trying to bring her to life. You know?
Oh, how funny.
And we don't bring her to life, and we finally, me and the museum owner, give up. We turn around and leave, and suddenly the mummy wakes up and starts to walk behind us, and we're going out the door like, well, that failed. And then Lee Grant and Carol Kane met me at the San Francisco Zoo, mm-hmm. and there's a sequence where I get locked inside an empty cage.
Yeah.
Oh,
and they
no.
come along,
I
and
I think
them
I remember
while
that.
I'm locked up inside the cage.
I think.
Then there was a restaurant called the Casablanca. Yeah. So we went there one night and we photographed. I had a friend who did an imitation of Humphrey Bogart. So we did a takeoff on Casablanca. We had dancing
funny.
Girls, and a man puts a knife at my throat. And one of the great ones was called The Attack of the Incredible Killer Scarecrow. Over at Vacaville, they have a yearly scarecrow contest.
Yeah,
and this
yeah.
wonderful fella in a beautiful costume, we wrote a horror story around it. And that turned out to be one of the really good ones. Also, yeah. The Chamber of Horrors, Jack the Ripper, Midnight in the Chambers of Horror, where a beautiful woman comes to, she's supposed to be a wax figure. She comes to life. Suddenly, Jack the Ripper comes to life, and he's got to chase her down the aisle and kill her. And I come along to rescue her.
So hokey.
It was great. I also did some private eye takeoffs.
Yeah.
Did you ever?
It was a lot of fun.
Did you ever have a celebrity interview? Now, did you usually ask them ahead of time if they wanted to participate in one, or did you
Chuck
even?
Chuck Norris participated twice.
Oh, okay.
In 1980, I think it was 81, he was making a movie over by Walnut Creek. Arinda, in the Arinda area.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
At someone's home up there. They had this beautiful home. And we did a two-part segment where I sneak onto the set, and I'm there to interview Chuck Norris. And who was the actor? I'm trying to remember the name of the actor who played the black private detective. Gosh, I'm having a little breakdown here.
Jeez,
do you remember?
It was in a movie?
Yeah. He starred in several movies playing the black private detective.
That's not Shaft, is it?
Anyway.
Is it Shaft?
Shaft? Is that what you're thinking about?
I'm sorry?
Is it Shaft?
Yeah, Shaft.
Shaft, okay.
Yeah, the lead actor of Shaft. He was in the film, and he played a policeman, and he came up with a gun, and he says, "What are you doing here? This is private property. We're making a movie here." And I said, "Well, I'm here to interview. I'm from Creature Features. I'm here to interview Chuck Norris." And the thing got developed from there.
Yeah, in fact,
There were a lot of people who participated in some of those, yeah.
And you made a movie too, right?
Well, I made a feature film in the 70s, and it was released in 1978, just before I became the host of Creature Features. And oddly enough, it was about a horror convention, a staff that was putting on a horror convention, and we photographed the theater sequences at the Fox Theater in downtown Oakland.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And Bob Wilkins had a small part in it. And it was it got some good reviews. It played for a couple of years around the country. Nightmare in Blood was the title.
Very cool.
And it was one of the first films to deal with fandom. for example, one of the characters was named Gary Arlington. Mm-hmm. Well, Gary Arlington was a real-life person who opened the first comic book store in America at 23rd and Mission in San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
Oh, cool.
And we had, and each character more or less represented some element of fandom. Mm-hmm. One was a mystery writer. Then there was a beautiful young woman who was part of the staff, you know, and she was being pursued. It turned out the main villain is a vampire who's a Hollywood film actor named Malachi. He's made a series of films, but in real life he's a vampire. Nobody knows that.
I believe it.
And he has two PR men who are both reincarnations of Burke and Hare. Somehow, because he's centuries old, the vampire has brought them back to life, and they have become his modern-day PR representatives for the film.
Now, did you ever have any aspirations like, hey, I want to direct another one, or did you think, you know, I made one, I did my thing?
Well, I did have some limited success. I was able to sell a story idea to Gene Roddenberry for Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
However, even though he bought it and paid me for it, it never became a full script because NBC did not approve of the story idea.
Interesting.
Huh.
And the basic idea was the Enterprise lands on a planet where good and evil have been switched around.
Oh, wow.
I guess NBC felt it was anti-religious or something. Anyway, they would not allow him to do that. Huh. I wrote a screenplay called Sarge, which Adam West took an option on.
Uh-huh.
He spent a year or so trying to sell it. He wanted to get away from the Batman image.
Yeah.
And in this picture, he would have played a soldier who represents men from all the wars that America has fought, from the Revolutionary War to the Civil War, World War One, World War Two.
Interesting.
Now, you wrote a fiction book as well.
He symbolized a collection of those characters, and it was sort of a fantasy war story.
Interesting.
And he tried to option it, but it didn't happen. So I was able to sell it as a novel to Avon Books, and it came out, I think, around 76.
Hmm. That's cool.
Are you talking about your fiction book that you wrote called World War III?
Yes, it was called World War III. Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, I was reading about that, and that's...
my title was Napalm Sunday. That was considered a little too much for its time. And they retitled it World War III. Yeah, it did very well as a paperback.
Is it still available?
I had a co-writer who helped me produce the movie. We produced the film together.
Wow.
Ken Davis. We worked together at the San Francisco Chronicle. And we did a book called Dark Side of the Hunt, which was nominated for a mystery award. It didn't win. But it later became a series. I think there were 6 or 8 books that Ken wrote. Our relationship kind of came to an end. When I switched over to Creature Features, I just didn't have time.
Yeah.
Doing a show every week and working at the Chronicle.
Two jobs wasn't enough.
Two jobs, yeah, three. I wish I could have. Anyway, no, that was the only major film book that Ken and I did together.
Still, how many people could say they did that?
Yeah,
really. Well, it's too bad we couldn't have sold the idea to Hollywood. It was about a black private eye, Carver Bascom, and this was before Shaft.
Whoa, wow.
This was a couple of years before Shaft.
Imagine if that had taken off. You could have had a whole string of movies there.
Who knows what might have happened. You just never know.
Very cool.
Are you still writing, or are you have you done?
I had two books that came out last year: Comedy Icons of the 20th Century, interviews with I forget how many. There were like 50 or more. There were two books. There were 73 personalities, 307 photographs. A lot of them had never been used before. Some were from Creature Features. Interviews with Carol Channing, Jim Nabors, who just died, Lonnie Schell, Bob Hope, Bing Crosby. These were all personal interviews I had done, and I was able to bring them together. Mae West, Rodney Dangerfield, Sid Caesar, Imogene Coca, George Burns, Lucille Ball, Jackie Gleason. The Lucille Ball story is kind of important. Can I take a minute to tell you
that?
Absolutely. Sure.
Yes. A representative of CBS called me and said, if you can be at a certain address tonight, I happen to be in L.A. with my wife doing some stories. He says, you'll get a great interview. So my wife and I went there, and it was the home of Lucille Ball. And she was making a TV show with Jackie Gleason. And so Jackie Gleason showed up that night. Mm-hmm. And we had this wonderful discussion. There were about, I think there were only about eight critics there, eight newspaper people. It was strictly an out-of-town press. And I was one of those out-of-town people. So we did the interview, and afterward, Lucy invited my wife and I to go inside and just stay for a while, you know, have a drink and let's talk. And I asked her about Star Trek, because she had run Desilu Studios when Star Trek first started on...
Desilu.
When Star Trek was first being produced at Desilu Studios. Mm-hmm. Lucy got a phone call. This was like February of 1966. We saw your pilot. This was the second pilot they had produced. The first one had been rejected. We saw your new pilot. We think it's wonderful, and we want to put it on the air in September. But I need a green light. I need your commitment that you will produce the show. And so Lucy said, I'll call you back. And she called a meeting of all of her executives. And she told them, we have the opportunity to bring Star Trek onto CBS. And suddenly, one of the execs says, think twice, Lucy. Gene Roddenberry is hard to deal with. He spent too much money making those pilots. This could be a disaster for the studio. We could be broke in 6 months. And other people had negative things to say. And Lucy sat there listening to all of this. And suddenly, she says, I had a kind of breakdown inside, because Desilu Studios, ironically, had previously been RKO Radio Pictures Studio. Mm. And that's where she had worked in the late 30s. She was under contract there. And one day she came to work and was told her contract was up and it wasn't going to be renewed. And she says, I was heartbroken. I thought my career is over. Of course, it wasn't. She would go on to 20th Century Fox and make movies there, and of course eventually do I Love Lucy on television. But she says, I was just heartbroken, and I just didn't have the heart, feeling the way I did that day, to tell all of those wonderful people who had worked in Star Trek, I'm sorry, but we're not going to produce your show. So she went to the phone, she called NBC back, and she guaranteed that they were going to produce the show. And think about it for a moment. If she had listened to those people, it's very possible Star Trek would have never happened.
Yeah.
Wow, that's true.
As we came to know it in September of 1966 and beyond.
Bless that woman.
And here's another irony. Huh. They sold the studio. She sold the studio about a year later to Paramount, because Paramount and RKO were back-to-back, separated by a wall.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
All Paramount had to do was tear down the wall, and they now had a bigger studio.
Yep.
And she sold the studio, I think, for $18 million.
Wow. Huh.
And one of the things Paramount inherited were the rights to the future for Star Trek. Of course, as you know, it only lasted two seasons, and then it was canceled. But suddenly the world reacted to that. And suddenly NBC woke up to, hey, they want this show back. And it was the first time a show that had been canceled was suddenly rescheduled. And the series came back for one more season. So it was only on for three seasons, despite its great popularity. I guess the ratings did not always represent that. Mm-hmm. But so for $18 million, they got the studio and the rights to Star Trek, and they began, of course, 10 years later to make a series of movies and other spin-off shows on television. So think of how many millions and millions and millions did Paramount make.
Still make.
That far exceeded the near $18 million they paid for the rights to buy that territory.
That was a good investment.
And how many lives have been changed as a result of that decision, too?
I'm sorry?
And how many lives have been changed as a result of that decision, too?
Just think of Leonard Nimoy. Gee, I got to interview him so many times. He came to San Francisco in 1980 to star in a one-man show. Mm-hmm. He played the brother of Vincent Van Gogh.
Interesting.
And he came on Creature Features. He was my guest. Mm-hmm. And I was able to cover him for the San Francisco Chronicle. But he was talking about how vital this part was. You know, he had done television shows off and on, small roles here and there, but this was the real breakthrough. And this had really established him. But he wanted to do other things. He wanted to show the audience that in addition to Spock, he was capable of so many other things. And, of course,
he wrote poetry,
he became
too.
A director, a film director.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good one, actually.
And did... So, yeah, he was a very good director.
Yeah, he did a couple of
his career
Star
just
Trek
really
movies.
Was wonderful. And William Shatner, I think you know this, William Shatner has written a book about Leonard Nimoy.
Yes.
Called Leonard, that's very, very, very wonderful.
Yep. Yeah. Did you ever see his movie Incubus?
Incubus.
William Shatner, it's all in Esperanto. The entire film spoken in Esperanto.
We did a whole show about that.
Perhaps I didn't. I can't seem to remember.
It was like 1966. I don't remember who directed it, but it was released.
Was that a William Shatner movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't they do a version where it was in English?
What's that?
Wasn't there also a version that was done in English?
Originally it was done in English and it was done in French, and they lost the English version. And when they put it on video, they had to cover up the French subtitles and put an English subtitle, but the entire film was made in this made-up language of Esperanto.
I have a vague memory of that. I'll have to...
I'll send you a copy
of
it.
I wrote six editions of the Creature Feature Movie Guide.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you knew that or not. There were, it was an alphabetized list of reviews of all the horror and sci-fi and fantasy movies that were made even back to the silent era.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
There were like 16,000 reviews before, over a period of, was a period of 20 years that I did the research and saw all these.
This is before Leonard Maltin ever did his too, right?
Yeah.
Pardon me?
Isn't this before Leonard Maltin did his?
Oh, yeah. He had. He still writes the books, I think, doesn't he?
I think so. Once in a while, they're updated. I think not as frequent, though.
I think maybe it's Incubus, 19... what I have in my guide, can I mention
sure.
this?
Sure.
I have 1982, John Yu, Legend of Hell House, helms the grisly Canadian horror story in which... The town of Galen is terrorized by an invisible sex-starved demon that materializes during the dreams of a man whose mother was once a witch. Are we talking about the same movie?
No, that was the early 80s horror movie. This one was 1966.
Okay, that was John Cassavetes, John Ireland.
Yeah, that's a totally different movie.
Okay,
this literally...
That's a different film.
Shatner literally made this movie in black and white in the Bay Area like months before he started Star Trek. And it was literally lost for forever. Nobody could find a negative, and they thought it was destroyed. The lab said, sorry, sir, it was destroyed in a fire. He's like, I pay you to archive this. He sued the studio or the lab and got a settlement, but they did find a print in Europe, and they released it in video, I think, in the late 90s.
And, no, you know, I guess I...
It's pretty wild.
you know, I'm almost... 80 years old, you know, and sometimes it's hard to remember some details.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure,
from the
past. Absolutely.
You know, John,
if you will excuse me.
We did a whole show about this movie, and we'll forward you the archive so you can hear about it.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I'll look this up, and I might be able to find a copy.
I'll somewhere. Send you a copy. Yeah. Don't worry about it. I'll send you one.
Oh, okay. And don't forget, I'm going to send you those books, too.
Absolutely great.
Okay. Thank you
so much.
And I'll tell you what, I'll send each of you a movie guide. Of the six books, five are now out of print.
Wow.
But I do have a few copies left of the fourth edition, and I will
very cool.
Get that in the mail to you.
Thank cool. you so
excellent.
Much.
Thank you.
In fact, I will Verna, I will talk to you later. I'll get the mailing address, okay?
Yes, I'll call you tomorrow and I'll give them
yeah,
to you.
Yeah, let's do that tomorrow.
Excellent.
Now, is there anything else about creature features that we haven't covered?
How about new projects?
Yeah.
And you got any new projects in the wings?
I wanted to do a book called The Career That Dripped With Gore.
Which would a great title.
Which would be a sequel to my I Was a TV Horror Host.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
I have so many interviews that I... didn't include in the first book. In fact, although I have Ray Bradbury, I found my transcribed copy of everything that we talked about, and there was a lot of stuff in there I had left out, and so I was redesigning it so that the missing material would be included.
Wow.
There were a lot of pictures and stuff. Because of some health reasons, I'm kind of put the project off. I may work on it later, but right now I had to kind of put it aside.
Go ahead and you want to give a shout out to your website again?
Yeah, it's stanleybooks, one word, .net. And on that website, you can still get a copy of I Was, through PayPal, I Was a Horror Host. You can also get The Gang That Shot Up Hollywood. That's a book I did of interviews from the Chronicle. Like, I have five interviews with Clint Eastwood.
Wow.
I have a lot of stuff about Robert Mitchum.
Wow.
I became a good friend of his brother, John. His brother had written an autobiography, Them Henri Mitchum Boys. And in 1989, I was able to publish that book with... there are photographs. You know how sometimes a biography or autobiography will only have pictures in the center of the book?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, in this case, I was able to put pictures on almost every page of whoever John Mitchum was talking about, like a character actor or a scene from a motion picture he's describing. And it was quite a job. It was quite...
I love Robert
Mitchum. Quite a project. It's the same... I brought to it the same kind of enthusiasm I did to a collection of short stories by Robert Bloch.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Robert Bloch, absolutely.
The book was called...
Psycho and...
There were stories about a character named Lefty Feep, who was a racetrack tout. They were reprinted from Fantasy Adventures, Fantastic Adventures, the pulp magazine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And anyway, also on the website, you can get an award-winning documentary I made about Eddie Muller.
Yeah, yeah, Eddie Muller. Mm-hmm.
The Czar of Noir. This is about, he's now, I believe, yes, every January he still puts on the Noir City Film Festival.
Yep. Yep.
He does it for 10 days. The seating capacity is 1,400 there.
Yeah.
And for 10 Castro. Days in a row, he fills it 95%.
Awesome. Wow. Hey, John, we're actually out of time.
It's one of the most successful It's one of the most successful film festivals in America.
Awesome. Hey, Dom, we're actually out of time, so we're going to have to let you go, but we really thank you for being on tonight.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Awesome.
You got to come back.
Yes.
Okay, I'd love to, and I have one piece of advice for all of you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Watch
yeah.
horror films. Keep America strong.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. It was an honor meeting you.
Wonderful to talk to you.
You
it
too.
Was wonderful talking to you, too.
Thanks,
it was an honor.
Have a great night.
Verna, call me tomorrow.
I will.
I'll get those books in the mail by Friday or so, okay?
Definitely. Thank
awesome.
You so much.
Thanks, John.
Okay.
Thank you, John. Bye,
thank
John.
You. Goodbye, Linda.
Goodbye, John.
Bye, Anthony.
But
bye,
night,
bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, sweet.
All right, folks. We are out of here. We are out of time on Ectoportal. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.
See
bye.
Portal.